Did you hear this, Banky?
No, I'm hearing of it now, right now.
All right. Yeah.
You'll find out about it when we get to it.
Yeah.
And you'll be like...
Yeah, don't read it now.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode 25 for Friday, the 12th of September, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech, and I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, what the heck is Broadcom up to? Intel gets a payday. It looks like Chrome is safe. Can AI predict the future? Find out in the AI Wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, you can ship stuff to the US now. All good.
Give me a couple of weeks, but yeah, I'll be there.
Excellent. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good. No holidays or gallivanting around the globe this week?
No, mate. No. Nice quiet week this week, yeah, albeit it's not been quiet.
No, yeah. We're knee-deep in projects now, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
We have a private cloud stood up. Hey. It's all go now.
You got nodes. Way! What? Excellent. What nodes did you get?
VE2 Mega 128s.
Okay. Okay,
nice the chunky big boys. Ones.
Yeah. The big boys, yeah. Excellent. And how long did it take to spin that up?
Are we taking into account the time it took to get the right permissions?
Well, no. From the time you hit the go button, let's assume, and it had the wheels had the rats had to run around in the runny cage.
It was about 3 hours.
Yeah. 3 hours.
Yeah, it wasn't hugely long.
Yeah, didn't get stuck this time.
No.
So.
Yeah, okay.
All right. VPC good. Service controls were in place properly, and it all came online.
Yeah, nice. I've been playing with Vertex AI deploying. Yeah, I did a bit of a Terraform deploy of a model. And an endpoint, and did it all via private APIs. Pretty good. Set up some PSA. So I set up Vertex AI, Document AI, and a Cloud Run instance all over private VPN. Yeah, it was a good little exercise.
Nice.
Nice. What's the running cost on that bad boy?
It's not me.
Not on my hip pocket.
It's a little exercise I'm doing in front of our clients. It's good.
Very nice.
I got all the code now, which is what I wanted.
Nice. Yeah, we're still waiting for 10 gig MACsec ports for dedicated interconnect.
You've got to get that approved, don't you? We ran through this little exercise, yeah.
And they're dragging their heels on that one. Quite a lot.
Do we know why? Why is that the case?
From our understanding is that MACsec is enabled by default on 100 gig ports, and I believe they split them down. They use another switch to basically break 100 gig down into 10 gigs, and yeah.
No, that so for the way that I understand it is they're QSFP 28 ports in the fabrics that they use, and they use a ponytail out of the back of it, so it gives them 4 25 gig.
Right. So they're doing it actually at the SFP. Yeah.
Right.
So the SFP has to be MACsec enabled. And
right.
That might
so
be
that
where the issue is.
That it requires some sneak netting of someone to go out and actually do that on the actual SFP.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bit of a pain.
That is a pain. Yeah. But how else would you do it, really? I mean, you don't want to have these 10 gig switches just floating around in the rack.
None of that nonsense.
Yeah, no, that's silly. All right. So what's this? What is a Google Inactive Account Manager?
Okay, so this has been around for years. It's like 6 years it's been around, but it's the first time that I've ran into it. I happened to be in my Google account the other day, and it was giving me the security advisor to go in and, you know, just go and check where you've been logged in, your pass keys, things like that. And then I get to the last part of it. It's like, you haven't set up Inactive Account Manager. I'm like, what is this? And it's It's a way to set up your account for if you were to become indisposed. You know, you don't log into your Google account for 3 months for reasons. It does say,
in the event of the user's death or inactivity.
Yeah, exactly. Then you can nominate other people's accounts and they get a notification. In fact, what happens is if you don't use your account for 2 months, you get a heads up like, hey, you know, you might want to just check this, but then after the third month, it can notify you know, these people who are on your list, and you can set up permissions of like what they get access to, like how much of your account. So yeah, you can have all sorts of different things. So, yeah, maybe you want to be like carte blanche and say, "Yep, all right. In the event of my demise, hand over my emails to the executor of my estate." You know, you certainly could do that. Yeah, there's a whole. It's quite granular what you can do. It was down to like Firebase endpoints and things that you could specify.
Wow,
they've broadened it out since I last used it. So we set it up for on Mum's account after she died, so that we got a notification to log in every 2 months, just to make sure that there was nothing outstanding on the estate, so we could address it if there was. And yeah, back then it was literally like your Gmail account. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, it's quite a bit that you can actually get access to that way. And then you can also then specify whether or not you want, after, say, another 3 months, do you just want all your data deleted or not? And yeah, so I think it's a good thing to set up, especially if you're thinking about like estate planning and all that kind of things. Then it's like, well, yeah, what do I do with my digital identity?
Yeah, and I've wanted to do a piece on that for a while on the show. Talk about you know, exactly estate planning. What do you do? Because all the passwords are locked up, and it can be a nightmare for the people to get access to it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it comes into broader systems. Like I've. You know, we've all been around long enough and we've been in online systems for long enough. Like, how many deceased colleagues would you have in your LinkedIn? Right. And every now and again, I'll see one of them get like a, you know, celebrate their work anniversary. Well, no, they passed like 8 years ago.
And Facebook's the same as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think a few years ago, I heard a stat like something, I don't know how true it is now, you know, by 2032, there'll be more dead people on Facebook than living people, something like that.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me. I'm pretty sure most of Facebook's like that now.
Pretty much. I mean, that's putting aside the whole dead internet theory, right?
Well, exactly. And what's going on with
this? Something to check out.
All right, I'm definitely going to go set that up. I just had a quick look down and it looks pretty straightforward to set up. New 10-inch rack.
I bought myself a GeekPie. It's like 3 or 4 E's. 10-inch rack. They actually make, it's them, I think, them and DeskPie. I'm not sure if they're 100% the same company or just like one's the retail arm. But they make these pretty well-built little 10-inch racks in a couple of different heights. I've got a lot of customers who use these. That's how they sort of first appeared to me. I'm like, oh, actually, these ones look really nice. I've signed a contract on buying a new factory, so that settles in November. None of the networking has been done yet, right? So it's brand new. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to build a little rack that I can use like a beachhead, right? And it's just going to have, you know, my 10 gig unifier router, my 10 gig core switch. It's going to have a couple of mini PCs as a cluster. That's going to be the backbone of my network. Before I get like a proper 19-inch rack pulled in and all the data cablers and everything. So this is my little tactical solution.
Right.
Nice. Okay. I like that. I just looked them up on Amazon. They look really good.
Yeah, it was like $200 delivered. Yeah. Like, bargain. Yeah.
The one I was looking at was $241.
Yeah, there you go.
And I've got Amazon Prime, so delivery is free.
Pretty good.
They're a nice little thing. And yeah, given that it can kind of sit... you know, like it's smaller than a PC tower. My one's a 10U one, so yeah. Anyway, that's gonna be my fun little thing to play with.
Nice. And what's this I hear about passkeys, Ian?
Oh, this isn't me. This is Dave.
Was that you? Oh, this is me. Yes. Was it?
Oh, wow. All me.
Okay.
All me. Okay, so
it's this, David show.
This is a this happened to a mate of mine, right? And this is a new and kind of scary thing. So I was chatting to a mate, and it was funny because we had been talking about password managers. And, you know, we discuss them all the time on the show and, you know, I use 1Password and we're having a conversation and he hadn't, you know, started using one yet. And then 2 days later, he's like, tell me about password managers because like his PayPal had been breached and his shop account and then, yeah, absolutely, like just everything. But so I was helping him out and as he's going through and he's changing all these passwords and he'd had to have his, because his credit card details had gone as well, right? So the first breach that he had was that someone had been in his PayPal account and was buying buying gift cards, right? And they laddered up, so they were like a $5 gift card, a $10, a $20, $50, $100, $500, $500, then got stopped because like they ran out of money and then they laddered back down again until they kind of like drained the account. And then he got that fixed with PayPal. And then a couple of days later, he finds out like, no, there's all these other ones on his credit card, like got completely maxed out, like $8,000 worth of transactions. Right. And he's trying to work out where it had come from. As he's working his way through his password resets, because you know, once I kind of imported his Chrome profile for him and it's like, here's the 400 websites where you've chucked passwords in and
it tells you
and then Watchtower tells you here's where all your duplicates are, here's all your vulnerable passwords and it's like you know, because you don't realize it once you make the transition to using a password manager, it's like, well, how did I do without it?
Yeah, and you see it presented in front of you.
Yeah, you're like, oh god. And I've used the same password for my internet banking is on like a World of Warcraft guild forum with a open, you know, PHP
connected.
So he's working his way through. Anyway, he goes through a couple of websites and he notices that a few of the websites had gift cards sitting in their checkout queues. Right, like, that's strange. And what had happened is because the credit card had been cancelled, they hadn't gone through. So they had been going through and trying these different websites to buy gift cards and then it hadn't gone through and they just left them in the cart. The thing that was the same on all of them is they were all Shopify websites.
Uh-huh.
Right. So he goes into his shop profile. He'd already reset the password, right? Like he'd reset the password 2 days prior. So how is all this going through? Passkeys, right?
Mm-hmm.
We found in his account, he'd never set up a passkey for his Shopify account, but there was one that was set on like a Chinese Android device in Indonesia.
There you go. Right?
So they'd gotten in with the password and the first thing that they'd done is deploy themselves a little passkey and there it was. So even though he'd changed the password,
they still had access
and that's how it was getting through. Yeah. So it's very interesting to see that them being used as like a beachhead to continue the attack.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So he went and removed that passkey and
that. And then he went back through all these other websites because he had been setting up passkeys for them, but we had to go back and check and be like, hey, let's just make sure that they haven't left any other ones anywhere else.
Oh god, I'm gonna go and audit all my passwords now.
yeah
oh, this
definitely
terrifies me. Absolutely terrifies me.
So yeah, watch out, man.
Well, while we're on that subject, Plex had a breach recently and a bunch of passwords got exposed. So if you're using a Plex there, I think I sent it through to you guys. Reset your Plex password account, password on your Plex account.
Plex has been breached a couple of times.
Yeah, over the years they have.
Yeah.
But I've got a completely long, unique password now. I couldn't even tell you what it is.
Yep, that's what password managers are for.
Mm. Exactly. Until you get pinged on like some obscure app on your phone that doesn't support the password manager something like Google Messenger for kids and it wants me to use my Facebook account on my kid's phone And it's
you have to type it in.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, it's worse is when you have to type it on the Xbox with, like, the controller. And
uppercase, lowercase.
Yeah, and you're numbers, like, oh, why did I choose a 30-character password?
Yeah, that happens to us because we've got the PlayStation and the Xbox, and, like, both of those passwords are stupendously long for reasons that should be very obvious.
Yes.
And, yeah, every time you get, like, someone will come over and, oh, I'll just sign you out of your profile and sign into mine so I can use my profile on your Xbox. I'm like, yeah, right, whatever.
Nope.
And it doesn't dawn on me until later when I go to put the password. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Why did I agree to this?
Type this bloody thing in again.
Surely we can QR code that somehow. I mean, well, why don't we have that?
That's right. Like all the TV apps do it.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. If anyone's listening, then QR code that shit.
Yep.
Speaking of, I don't know. I've got no segue for this, but I had uBlock Origin Lite. I mean, I think we all do. It goes through phases where it's a constant war between YouTube and uBlock Origin to, like, remove the ads. And there was a couple of days there about a week ago or a couple of days ago where it wasn't blocking YouTube ads quite as well. I've just tested this morning, it seems to be. But just searching around the interwebs to see if anyone else is having this problem at the same time, the AI overviews told me that I could still install legacy uBlock Origin.
Nice.
The AI overview in Google search told me this, and I did not know this. And at the time, yes, you could go in and you could, in Chrome settings, re-enable legacy Manifest 2 and then download the package from the GitHub and just manually install it. Bang, and the original uBlock Origin was there. And that worked for about 2 days. And in the most recent update of Chrome, they've removed Legacy Manifest 2 completely.
Back to Gemini, ask it again.
No, so I'm back to uBlock Origin Lite. And it does look like they fixed the latest YouTube ad blocking issue that they had. So it doesn't seem to be blocking it now. So, yeah, go back and give it a go. I even went as far as setting up Firefox because you can put the legacy uBlock Origin on there. This was brought my question up around YouTube music and YouTube Premium because I was thinking, yeah, for about, was it $40 a month? You get
33, I think it is.
33?
I don't know. It keeps going up.
Yeah,
it keeps going up.
Of course. It's been skyrocketing. Like, I used to pay $17 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it went to 24, and now I think it's 32 or 33.
Yeah, well, it's $22 a month for Spotify for the family account, and $33 for YouTube Music and YouTube without ads, because you get it without ads on the telly then, which would be a bonus. So I've installed YouTube Music Client, and I'm going to give YouTube Music a go for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, nice.
You get it free for a few weeks, and just see if it works for me.
Interestingly, on that same sort of topic of blocking ads, so I was trying to watch SAS Rogue Heroes on SBS on the app the other day. There's a really cool series about the origin of the British SAS, and it's got some creative editing to it, but it's a good show nonetheless. And I run Pi-hole as my DNS server on my network. And I couldn't get a video to start for love nor money.
Yeah,
Netflix was working. All the other streaming apps are working, but SBS would not work. And I lodged a case with SBS to try and fix it. And as it turns out, they must be embedding a tracker in the front edge of their video stream. And Pi-hole is blocking that tracker. It's black-holing it. And so the video doesn't think it's got the tracker and it won't start.
Why aren't they all doing this?
Yeah.
You have to ask the question. How long before they do all do this?
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah. I think Plex has got a similar thing. You know, you can watch TV on Plex. Mm. That's ad-supported as well. You go to press play and all you get is a white screen. Just nothing happens there if you've got the ad blocker enabled on it. Not that I've watched TV on Plex, but I have tested it. Yeah. And speaking of funny things, I came across this pretty strange story. There's a lawyer, of all things, named Mark Zuckerberg. And he's from Indiana, and he has a Facebook account, right, like we all do. And apparently he uses Facebook to advertise his business and get clients and all the rest of it. And on more than one occasion, while he's in the middle of an advertising campaign, his account's been shut down and suspended.
I love the wording on this. Mark Zuckerberg is not impersonating Mark Zuckerberg because he too is Mark Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg.
The Zuck.
Now, the stupidity behind this, right? I mean, this goes to say how stupid these automated systems are. He gets asked to provide his ID and he sends his passport and all the things. It gets re-enabled and then matter of weeks, disabled again by some automated system. You're impersonating. No, hang on a minute, mate. My name is Mark Zuckerberg. You can get the out of here. So he's suing. Being a lawyer, he knows how to do that. And he's suing for loss of revenue and damage to his business. And good on him.
As he should.
As he should. I mean, it's just stupidity. Some of these automated systems. I mean, have an automated system. But then have a person that's actually going to respond to your issue with the automated system. They just don't.
Actually, it was interesting the amount of money that's involved in this, because it said his office spent $11,000 to advertise his page on Meta's platform, and then his account was disabled for allegedly impersonating the Meta Mark Zuckerberg, but he still has to pay for his adverts on his account that's disabled. And I'm like, no.
That's not the problem. The way this works. Yeah. Doesn't work that way, guys.
And, to reference the great movie Office Space, right? Why should I change my name? He's the one who sucks. Yeah.
Well, that he does.
Yep. I don't know. The stupidity of some of the internet is stupid these days, I have to say.
Yes.
Really. Speaking of something that's not so stupid, NBN, we're upgrading.
It is.
This coming week.
Yep. This week we are getting, so the gigabit plans go from 1,000 down 50 up to 1,000 down 100 up. Then also a new plan comes into effect. I believe it's the same week. Is it 2,000 down and 200 up?
That's right. Yep.
Which I may or may not be agreeing to move on to.
You'll need to upgrade your router.
Need to upgrade everything. Yeah. Yep. And make sure you get the NTU that actually has a 2.5 gig port. Apparently, there's some older models that still have the 1 gig port.
Well, I only got fiber to the premise like 12 months ago. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Okay.
The one you have is a 1 gig one, but they will send you the upgraded one soon as you upgrade your plan. Yeah. Right. And so you'll get the home NTD. But if you pay if you buy a business plan or you pay an extra $100, you get the business one. The business one is very similar to your current one in that it has the four UniD ports.
Yep.
One's
got UniD and UniV.
Yeah, the UniV is the voice one that no one ever uses.
It doesn't get used anymore.
Yeah. But the new one you'll get as a home user only has a single port on it because the vast majority of people only need one service.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's right. So I've already got new switches and new Wi-Fi access point because I upgraded the Wi-Fi out to the shed, because I've got my laser engraver out there, and I've got a computer out there now.
How did you do that? Did you run a wire, or did you?
I just got an external rabbit's ear unify access point, mesh access point, and I screwed it to the outside of the shed, and I powered it via PoE that runs the roller door, off that same PowerPoint, and it just meshes fine, and we've got good signal out there. I think it gets like 150 megasecond. Out there, which is plenty fast enough for all I'm doing is sending it cut files.
Yep.
So all I need to do now is just get the new Unify Gateway Fiber, I think it's called.
Yeah, the fiber has the 10 gig WAN and LAN on it and 2.5 gig Ethernet ports as well.
Yeah. Mm. So that will be my next move.
But there's going to be a lot of people that are going to upgrade and then they're going to wonder why they can't get the speed because the vast majority of devices aren't going to push more than a gig.
Yeah.
Or they're going to do their router, and then they'll have like a switch that is like a, you know, $100 Netgear switch.
Why aren't I getting the speed? Yeah.
It's a Netgear hub.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
And the little collision light starts flashing away.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it now because currently I've got 229, the Cisco PoE ones, 2960s, yeah, or 65s, I think. I've got two of those, and then I've got TP-Link unmanaged, just an unmanaged one with an FSP, SFP connection up to that, mm-hmm. and that powers most of the network. And then the Cisco ones for the stuff in the rack.
Yep.
I'm thinking of getting rid of all that and just getting one 48-port TP-Link 2.5 gig monster and just have a big, fat, managed network that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that'll be my preparation move for that because I've put in 5E, Cat 6 here anyway.
Nice.
So that's all ready to go. All right. Well, with that nearly 30 minutes of chat out of the way, let's move on with the community news. All right, Ian, take it away. Let's hear what's going on in GDG World.
So super quick, there's four events that I found around the country this in the next couple of weeks. So Sydney... GDG Cloud Sydney is doing a Google I/O Extended event on the September the 18th from 5:30 till 8:30. This is at Google's office in Sydney, so in Pyrmont. So get down and hang out with the Google folks and listen to some cool talks about AI and other stuff like AI. That sounds awfully like AI. That is also AI.
It's all AI. It's AI all the way down.
And Google, so GDG Sydney, not the Cloud Sydney group, but the Sydney group is doing a mobile edition of Google I/O Extended. Again, it's at Google Sydney. This time it's on the 25th of September from 5:30 till 8:30. And they've got a couple of talks there. One to do with Firebase Studio. And the other one to do with Android apps. So that will be a really good one. Melbourne, as always, Melbourne has a stupidly hectic schedule of events down at GDG Melbourne. They're fantastic down there. And this time, 17th of September from 5:45 at the Mantle Group head office in Flinders Street, they will be doing their September coding night. And then last one that I've got is GDG Hobart is running an event on September 17th at the Centenary Building in Sandy Bay. And their event is Flutter in 2025 and what matters and what works. So get along to that one if you're down in Hobart.
Excellent. Stuff happening all over the country. GDG I/O Extended AI Cloud Edition. Yeah, this sounds good.
Yep.
Engaging talks. Who's talking at that? So we've got how you can extend your platform with agentic features and agentic AI. What works and what doesn't? Very good. Get along to those. All right. Well, with that out of the way, let's move on with the news items. And first news item for this week, Google cuts. Google cuts 35% of manager roles as Sundar Pichai pushes for more efficiency. And I don't think it's Google that's the only mob that's doing this. This seems to be a bit of a trend at the moment. I've seen a few videos pop up on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a few places that are doing it at the moment. It sort of seems to be that time of the year where companies want to cut some staff and maybe realise some money for their investors.
It's sort of interesting on the article, though, is that it seems that the vast majority of these managers were people who only had, so like, three or less staff. So they weren't managing big teams. And it says a big percentage of them have just gone back to being individual contributors.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So that's what struck me as well. Like, it says Googlers, it says much of the reduction, affected managers who were overviewing fewer than three people, but still 35%.
Yeah.
35% of managers had less than three less than three people. Like, what the?
Yeah, well, and the other part of this is they've offered the voluntary exit program as well to these managers in multiple areas, including search and marketing, hardware and people operations. And their chief people officer, Fiona Ciccone, revealed that between 3% and 5% of the staff in those groups have taken up the exit program.
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, you might.
Yeah. Look, it's,
I mean, if you're thinking of leaving, then why not?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah, short, sharp one that. You know, we just needed a people story, so that was that's what we got this week.
Sorry, we're talking about, talk about the banks just slashing staff. But yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know. It's a short, sharp one. All right, well, let's get on to the big story of the week. Broadcom. Well, one of them.
Our friends, Broadcom.
Well, so because Broadcom is that, so Tesco's suing them at the moment. Well, Tesco's suing them and their license provider, which is Computer Center.
I feel bad for Computer Center in this.
Yeah, because Computer Center are the innocent bystander here that are getting hit by shrapnel. Tesco is not known for standing down.
No, that's right. So UK supermarket giant Tesco, taking an article here from the Register, Tesco has sued Broadcom for breach of contract pertaining to its VMware licensed, named Computer Center as a co-defendant and warned it may not be able to put food on the shelves if the situation goes pear-shaped. That's pretty dire.
So, they're making it out to be very dire. But in all honesty, Tesco bought VMware vSphere Foundation and Cloud Foundation products, plus subscriptions to VertZilla's Tanzu products, and agreed a contract for support and services and software upgrades until the end of 2026, with an option to extend for 4 years. Right. Broadcom has now gone...
That's a signed contract.
Yep,
it's a deal.
A signed contract.
Yeah. Yep.
Broadcom have now gone, We're not doing that anymore. You've got to buy a subscription if you want support and services and updates.
Pretty blatant breach of contract, right?
We won't upgrade you to VCF 9 with your current licenses at all.
Yep. So now, to give you an idea of the size of this VMware estate, they're talking something in the vicinity of 40,000 server workloads. This is not a small estate by any means of anyone's imaginations. Like, this runs their registers. It runs everything.
Tesco
is
massive.
Food supply to the United Kingdom.
Yep.
So Tesco's filing warns that Broadcom, VMware and Computer Center are each liable for at least £100 million or $134 million Australian dollars in damages plus interest. And the longer the dispute persists, the higher the damages will climb. So they are really trying to stick it to Broadcom to say, no, you will honour this or you're going to pay up big.
And to be honest,
I hope they win.
I hope so too.
I really do, because something needs to stop Broadcom in its tracks, because the next story we're going to cover is going to knock your socks off.
Yeah, this is a little snack one.
Yeah, this is the small bickies.
Well, this is a react, because I haven't read this story yet. I'm going to react live to this. But this Tesco thing, this could blow up. We're going to have to keep a track of this one. It's just that I'm getting the popcorn out, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Popcorn and beer. It's time to go.
So we know Broadcom has been having a lovely time of screwing small partners, medium-sized partners, large-sized partners, right, and pushing us out. So, like, you know, you pretty much can't be a partner. You can't resell VMware at all.
Mm.
Right? You have to be, you know, you have to be the big boys.
Yeah, you have to be one of the big guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was leaving you with very, very few options. If you didn't want to negotiate with Broadcom directly, you could use a solution such as Google Cloud VMware Engine.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, as we're big fans of. We've all worked on it a bunch. You know, yep. Like the three people on this call have probably got some of the most experience in the country on that platform.
Yep.
All right. And one of the really nice things is you just talk to Google. Talk to Google. One throat to choke. If they have a major issue, they go back to VMware. You don't have to deal with it.
They have VMware people embedded in Google.
Yeah. And same was if you're in Azure, you could use AVS, or, you know, if you were AWS, they had VMC until, they had that rug pulled from them. Well, as of August 29th, Broadcom have announced you now have to get your licenses from Broadcom.
No more GCVE licenses.
No more. What? All licenses have to come from Broadcom. They give you license portability. You will not be able to, they announced this in August, and it's from their new financial year, which is like the last quarter of this year. So it's very soon. You will not be able to get your licenses through a hyperscaler.
Nope.
What?
Yeah. Google
don't have the pull to like go back to Broadcom and say, yeah, nah. Like,
they'll have to join in with Tesco.
Yeah, yeah. So Microsoft actually released a really good article on this to outline exactly what's going on, because it's such a cluster. So Microsoft has said they're discontinuing selling AVS with VCF subscriptions after the 15th of October.
Microsoft just throwing their hands in the air. Not doing it. No.
Can't do it.
So you've got 36 days.
Yep.
Too difficult. Done.
After the 15th of October.
What about existing customers?
If you're in a contract, so you've contracted for, let's say you've bought 3 years subscription to GCVE, you get that 3 years. At the end of that 3 years, you need to have a VMware license, or guess what? It all stops.
You've got to go back to VMware, to Broadcom, to re-license. Yep.
And then you do BYOL.
Yeah,
it's going to be arms and legs handed over to do that.
Yeah. So what?
Oh boy.
What Microsoft is saying is after the 15th of October this year, customers purchasing new nodes, and so this also applies to new nodes. So if you've got, let's say you're a big bank in Australia and you've bought 35 nodes of GCVE for 3 years, you are licensed for 35 nodes of GCVE for 3 years. If you need one more node, you need to have a license from Broadcom for that node. After the 15th of October.
Right.
Right. So
after that's a drop dead date. After that date, no licenses sold by anyone else except Broadcom.
Except Broadcom. You will buy your license off Broadcom and that's it.
Yeah. Now, Broadcom is selling this as it's empowering for customers because you'll own your licenses. They're portable. So you can use them on-prem and you can use them in the cloud and you can use them wherever you want to as long as you talk to us.
Yep.
Yeah, and we will charge you whatever the hell we like.
Exactly.
Yeah. No economies of scale with a hyperscaler behind you.
Yep.
Right.
So they've said Broadcom is transforming its hyperscaler go-to-market to a license portability-only operating model beginning in the new fiscal year. So no more hyperscalers will be able to sell you a VMware license for your VMware nodes, whether it's AVS or whether it's GCVE or insert VMware solution here.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Ah, what a pain.
Yep.
Maybe Alibaba Cloud could do it because it's probably a dodgy license. It's a keygen license.
Anyway. They got a keygen. Yeah, there's a GitHub repo with that in it. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
So I actually see this as a huge opportunity. And if anybody from Nutanix is listening, this is a massive opportunity for Nutanix. Because now that they've got Nutanix on Azure, they've got Nutanix on AWS, and the Nutanix cloud clusters on GCP is in public preview, I see this as a huge opportunity to come in and completely undercut Broadcom's licensing costs and say it's going to cost you 10, 50, I don't know, something $1,000 less a year to use Nutanix than it is to use VMware, and we'll throw in a whole heap of training and you can come over to Nutanix and we'll look after you.
Mm.
And a little spot in the market, Nutanix needs to hurry up and come up with a HCX alternative.
Yep.
Right, mm. Because picking up the workloads and shifting across is one thing, but you need a network transformation tool.
Yeah. So I see this as a huge opportunity for competitors to Broadcom.
Yeah.
I just hope that they can capitalize on it in time because they've got less than a month.
I wonder, I might sit down and write myself a cloud-hosted Proxmox 9 accelerator.
Yeah.
Already working on it, mate.
yeah. Wow. Okay.
Because you can run Proxmox on GCE instances if you wanted to.
That's good.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, quite easily. Yeah.
Using Hyperdisk and using like C3 nodes or Z3 nodes.
Yep.
Whatever you want.
Yep. And of course, with that, you get your virtual networking and yep.
You get tier one networking on it. You can specify how much networking backplane you want.
It'd be an interesting little project.
Yep.
All right. Well, I got nothing. I mean, the stupid at Burns, right?
We've left him speechless, Dave.
He is agog. I mean, in fairness, this came out not quite 2 weeks ago, but you and I only just found out about it yesterday, Ian. So us yesterday.
We've had time to react because yesterday it was like, what's going to happen to this project? If we don't get these nodes in and purchased and committed to before October 15th, then this customer is going to have to go back to Broadcom and relicense everything, including their on-prem stuff.
Which is what they were trying to avoid.
Which is what they were avoiding because the whole purpose of this migration was to get out of underneath Broadcom's iron fist of give us money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Quite a couple of people on the project. Friends don't let friends negotiate with Broadcom.
Yeah, well, that's 100% true.
Oh, well, Hoctan needs another boat, so...
Yeah. You can't really call it a yacht. It's not really a yacht. It's more like a ship.
Well, you take the yacht out to the...
Oh, yeah, you take the yacht to the
that's
ship.
That's the runabout.
Yeah. It's your tender. That's it.
All right. Well, look, we're going to definitely keep a track on that. And on that bombshell, let's move on to another, mini nuke. the US buying a large slab of Intel.
This is an interesting one, right? So,
state-controlled assets.
Well... the only thing that I would say on this piece, so what has happened is the US government has now got nearly 10%, it's like 9.9% of Intel in return for the remainder of the CHIPS funding and some other secure enclave funding. So they've put up the cash, but now they have an equity stake in Intel. And as much as I don't like the fact that the current sitting president of the US, is strong-arming private enterprise and threatening their CEO if they don't do what he wants. It's just putting that aside, I feel like if your company is in dire straits enough that you are so desperately in need of a cash injection from the government, why shouldn't the citizens of the country have an equity stake in your business?
It's
better than just a straight up handout, right? Which we saw around the COVID times, which was fair enough. But that happens to prop up industries, right?
Banks got billions.
This is actually an ownership transfer.
The whole, too big to fail stuff that we had during the GFC, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of come down on this as think of how much money we had to pour into Qantas and we didn't get anything in Australia, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We should have got a return from that. The citizens of the country put up the cash. It should sit there on the books.
Maybe we sell it down later. So Qantas pays it back or we get a stake in Qantas. That's the way it should have worked. I was reading the numbers behind this. So yeah, it's a 9.9% stake in the company, which is equivalent to 433.3 million primary shares of Intel common stock at $20.47 per share. The government will receive a 5-year warrant at $20 per share for an additional 5% of Intel common shares, exercisable only if Intel ceases to own at least 51% of the foundry business. So they're hedging this on you must own the foundries in order to, or at least the majority share of the foundries in order to keep this.
Right. We're not interested in you if you don't have the fabs.
Yep.
Yeah, because they want to keep it under US control. That's what that's all about. And the story we'll see in a minute on TSMC, it reflects that as well. Now, has this deal been inked? Has this been signed off? Because I'm going into something here, but has this been completed? Has the cash actually been handed over?
Well, the cash for the chip stuff has, and the secure enclave stuff. So the US Chips and Science Act, so there's a remaining $5.7 billion in grants previously awarded but not yet paid to Intel under the US Chips and Science Act, and $3.2 billion awarded to the company as part of the secure enclave program.
Well, they better hurry up and get it because my understanding at the moment with the tariff situation is that it's gone through two courts. It's been told to be illegal in two courts. The US government is making an appeal to the Supreme Court at the moment. Meanwhile, they're collecting tariffs, right? If the Supreme Court says your tariffs are illegal, then they will have to repay about $500 billion worth of tariffs, which is about half of their Federal Reserve.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Now, the US has never had that little cash in reserve before.
Yeah, that's a lot of coin.
Yeah. Awful. Yeah, they usually hold about 800 and 900 billion in Federal Reserve. 500 billion, and they have to repay it as quickly as possible, otherwise there'll be interest.
Well,
I bet the Supreme Court upholds his ability to do it.
Well, we will see, won't we? Because we're not going to go down there, but we know they're all these buddy pal chums. But that, like, if I was Intel, I'd be trying to get this money as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Well, so the other story here is that that some of the investors aren't happy about this investment deal, right? Because apparently, after Intel accepted the deal at a meeting with the president, it alarmed some investors when Trump boasted that his pressure campaign worked, claiming that the CEO of Intel, Lip-Bu Tan, walked in wanting to keep his job and ended up giving us $10 billion for the United States. So there's so much political drum up going on, as well as the investment. It's very hard to discern what's actually true in all of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it does set a bad precedent when the president of the United States can walk in and just go, "You're going to do this or else." That doesn't.
Well, he sees China doing that, right? And they're able to pivot very quickly and spin up new things and new markets, new opportunities really quickly because there is that state-controlled element there, and they can direct the companies to do things. Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he desperately wants it.
He desperately wants that, and we're starting to see that come into our playground, right? Now, along with that, you've got TSMC. TSMC will no longer use Chinese-made equipment in its 2-nanometer chip production lines. This is the change comes as US lawmakers advance the Chip Equip Act. So TSMC will no longer be, if they're using Chinese-made equipment, they'll no longer be able to get Is it bonuses or like supply stuff to the US? Once again, Trump having his way and trying to keep manufacturing only happening in the US and trying to lock China out of it.
Yeah.
And I think he's figured out that, you know, as we've discussed before, there's only like 2-nanometer. Are Intel doing 2-nanometer?
Nope.
Only TSMC only are doing TSMC 2 nanometer. Doing it. Yep.
So this
is one of the things that can't be kept in the US. So this is why he's bringing in initiatives like this.
Yeah. So actually really interesting about the 2 nanometer stuff. According to TSMC, the 2 nanometer production will bring full node improvements, including a 10 to 15% boost in performance and a 25 to 30% reduction in power draw, which there's some big claims.
Yeah, but as we've seen, it's 30% reduction like per transistor, but they'll still put more transistors in. So overall, you're using more power anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the performance is up though.
That's right. So whereas we've had just generation after generation after generation of Intel processors and AMD processors where essentially all they've done is just jam more power into it, which means that they get hotter and they run faster because they've got more power in them. But this is an actual change in lithography. So they're talking here about it'll be the first production technology by TSMC to feature gate all-round transistors, which is a significant structural shift since FinFETs.
Right. Because I know they were having the problem where electrons were jumping across the gate because it was getting
electron
so small.
Tunneling.
Yep.
Electron tunneling, yeah. I don't know what architectural change they've made to do this, but I'm going to have to go look it up now.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting, yeah.
There you go. It's interesting to see what's going on with the US manufacturer thing that's happening in the United States, where they're trying to bring all of their manufacturing back onshore and get rid of all import.
Well, we'll see if it works, but in the meantime, it's going to be very, very painful for them because they've got to, obviously, to build stuff locally. They're still going to make a lot of imports, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, all right. There's a lot going on there, a lot to unpack. Let's move on. Let's move on with some actual Google news. Google, this is an article from BBC and one we've been tracking. Google avoids breakup, but must share data with rivals. So Google would not have to sell its Chrome web browser, yay, but must share information with competitors, a US federal judge has ordered. So they're keeping the band together. The remedy is decided by the district judge, Amit Mehta, have emerged after a years-long court battle over Google's dominance in the online search. So yeah, they get to keep it now. Can keep it, but will be barred also from having exclusive contracts and must share search data with rivals. Exactly what that means.
What exactly are they going to share? Like, oh yeah, Joe Blogs search for Google on Google.
Yes.
Great.
Probably.
Awesome. Thanks.
I know. It doesn't go into the details. I imagine they would have some BigQuery instance or Spanner instance that's just got it all lumped in there, and then they would just share that out.
It'll be Spanner, I would assume.
It would be Spanner,
global.
Yeah.
This goes on to say that Apple also gets a nice win because the ruling forces Google to renegotiate the search deal annually. And did we all see that Google re-released the iPhone 12 under the guise of the iPhone 16 yesterday or the day before?
Apple released the...
Apple? Yeah.
Right, so it's basically a 12.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh no, it's got a camera bar on it, so it's a crossbreed between a 12 and a Pixel.
Right, and they've just rebranded it as a 16.
Yeah, it's a same.
Man, they're a black rectangle, man. Like they haven't really evolved much since like the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, it's pretty much
the same looking thing that they released last year and the year before and the year before and the year before.
I'd have to say so. We just upgraded my wife's phone, so she's got a Pixel 10 Pro now. So just waiting on the case to turn up before we actually migrate her over.
Yeah, good idea.
Made that mistake once. But, I mean, the thing that sold me on that is 10 times optical zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the optical zoom. Now that's that makes a big difference. But I have read. I mean, I'm rocking the Pixel 8 Pro, and specifically an article came up. If you've got a Pixel 8 Pro, and you go into a Pixel 10 Pro, don't expect much. There's not much of a
she's,
bump.
She's going from a 6.
That'll be a step.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the
And while on that, this article does go in to say Google will not have to sell off its Android operating system as well.
Yeah, and so DuckDuckGo have weighed in as well because, you know, search providers all trying to clout each other. So DuckDuckGo have said the order has failed to force the changes necessary to address Google's illegal behavior.
Well,
I don't know that it has.
Yeah, I don't know if it's illegal, but they're going to share the data now, so you can't complain about that.
That's it.
They'll just call it illegal, won't they? Okay. Well, we'll keep tracking that. Well, I mean, there's not much to track now. I mean, it sounds like it's a fait accompli. Google and Android stay, Chrome and Android stay with Google, and we just carry on.
Google shares what Joe Blogs is searching for.
That's it. Getting on with some security news. Now, this one cuts close to home. Melbourne dev finds gift card pins can be brute forced. Where do we begin with this one? The stupid it burns, right?
Yeah, this is akin to the Optus open API breach.
Oh my God. Come on, guys.
It's ridiculous. So the lowdown on this is that a bloke by the name of Simon Dean, Melbourne software developer, bought two gift cards worth $500 each that he intended to use to purchase a laptop at JB Hi-Fi. Why he didn't just go into JB Hi-Fi and spend the $1,000 is beyond me, but, you know.
It must be some reasons. Extra 10% or something you get.
Sometimes you'll have deals where it's like, you know, you buy the gift cards and you get like 7% back. I've done that myself in the past.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's like you buy the gift cards, you know, you get your little saving there and then you use them to buy the device. So
right.
Okay. So anyway, after buying the cards, he couldn't redeem them. The last four digits of the card he had trouble redeeming them as the cards had the last four digits scratched off them.
Scratched off, yeah.
So not sure why they were missing. He ended up calling the card network, which is the place that supplies all those gift cards to the likes of Woolies and Coles and all the rest of them. And they told him over the phone that one of the cards had been activated, and they said it occurred within an hour or two of him purchasing the cards. So he started digging, as you would. He said this occurred despite the film covering the pin for the card being intact and not scraped off. So like, oh, okay, it hasn't been tampered with, so what's going on? Surprised at the response, he investigated and found that the website had multiple unprotected API endpoints.
He just fuzzed the website, found the API endpoints.
Yep. Armed with this fresh knowledge, he bought a $20 gift card and he used a Python script that was mostly AI built.
I love it.
To brute force the 10,000 possible four-digit PIN values. Now,
is that all?
Because it's four digits. There's technically 0000 to 9999. Yep. That's the 10,000 combinations. There was no rate limiting. No rate limiting on the API whatsoever.
So hammered it.
15 minutes to write the script with AI and crack the PIN on a brand new gift card. So he raised this with the card network and the parent company, which is Incom. They confirmed the case, but they wouldn't provide any details. And they said they don't comment on individual cases due to privacy and policy restrictions. But they can share that the team has been in contact with Mr. Dean regarding the issue. And we've resolved both his case and the concerns he raised. It doesn't say that they fixed it. They've just resolved the case.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
So, look.
Are the APIs still there? And who else is having a go at them now?
Well, that's the question.
Cat's out of the bag now.
Yeah. So this was akin to Optus's, we've just got an API sitting in the background that releases a whole heap of customer information. Except so, this is people's money.
What's the flow on this, right? So you get a card, you go to the counter, you hand over your cash, they activate the card to put the money into that card, and then when you go home, you get the pin off it? Is that how it works?
So what the path of attack here is that attackers go in and they find all these gift card numbers, right? Or it's like the credit card number on your Visa card or your MasterCard, right? It's got a string of numbers on it. That's the card identifier, and then there's a pin. So it's a four-digit pin. So what they're doing is they're scratching off the last four digits of those card numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Users can't see that because the card's generally the card number is generally hidden underneath a bit of cardboard, right? That they come in like a bit of cardboard and
it's like a little holder. Yeah.
So you can't generally see that,
right? So like it'd be like I'm the hacker. I go into Woolworths. I grab the Apple gift cards and I pop the plastic card off. I scratch off the four numbers. Stick it back on there.
Yep.
But I've recorded it. I'm like, I know what this is.
Yep.
Right, I've taken these 10 gift cards. All right. So I stick it back and then I go back and brute force the pins. But at the moment, the value of the card would be zero.
That's right. And then the minute it changes, you can keep looking at it.
You've got to wait for someone to put money onto the card and then you can get it straight away. Yep. Ah, I see.
So as soon as that card becomes active, like it's done.
You kind of have like a stable of mule cards, effectively.
Yeah.
You're just polling.
You think there's probably, down in our local Coles, for instance, they've got their gift card rack down there, and there's probably 100 different variants of, like, sorry, there's probably 100 cards of maybe 20 different variants down there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all sorts of things. All produced by the same company.
By TCN. Yep. Unless they're your big ones like Steam. Or EB.
But the ones that are like a Westfield gift card.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
right?
JB
like,
Hi-Fi.
Yeah, so I used
Apple
there, but
Westfield.
Probably not the Apple
one.
Any of those, that's like, you know, the teenager's sports card.
Okay.
So
go to Rebel, basically.
That's what this ends up being. And like you get a $500 gift card down there and you just start polling that to find out when it's been activated, and then use it as soon as it's been activated.
Yeah. We've got a hit.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've got a hit. We're $500
checking it. Yep.
So
wow. Well, I've told my family not to buy any gift cards at the moment because of this problem.
Yeah.
And we don't know when it's going to get fixed. So don't buy gift cards.
I generally don't buy gift cards anyway, but you know.
Yeah. My family seem to love them. Every time there's a birthday or something, bang, there's a gift card there. Yeah, all right. So keep up with that. Now, while we're on security news, we've got a record DDoS attack launched from Google Cloud Platform. This is an article from CyberPress. Cloudflare's automated defense system successfully detected and neutralized a hyper-volumetric denial of service attack. It surged to an unprecedented, now get this, 11.5 terabits per second.
Yep. But only for 35 seconds.
I know, but still, at pretty massive, right?
It's like three quarters of the internet.
Now, basically, originally, primarily from compromised resources on Google Cloud Platform. Now, where have we heard about this before?
Well,
the last DORA report said that the main problem is compromised VMs.
Yep.
Compromised GCE instances, and this is what they're doing with them, and mining for Bitcoin, of course.
Yeah.
The UDP flood lasted 35 seconds, and this happened UTC 324 UTC September 1st, was detected by Cloudflare.
So that's 20 to 2 in the afternoon for us.
Yeah. And they stopped it. So interesting.
So get this one: 5.1 billion packets per second. was what, wow, what it peaked at.
Just fired it out.
Yep.
Did they say what the target was, or was it just to try and bring down Cloudflare?
No, I didn't see any target in it, but that doesn't mean that I didn't, that it doesn't say it.
Right. Does say Cloudflare plans to publish a detailed technical post-mortem, including packet captures, attack choreography, and mitigation telemetry graphs. All right, and while we're on technical news, let's talk about IP6. IP6 has gone GA within Google Cloud, and we now have GCP load balancers, internal and external pass-throughs supporting IP6. We have Cloud NAT supporting IP6. Also, Cloud Network Connectivity Center, IP6 all the way through. And supports the filtering and range filtering and the rest of it. And the VPCs now support IPv6 as well. GPU to GPU flows, A3s, A4s, the whole box and dice. IPv6 all the way down.
Nice
to see.
About time.
Maybe, 2026, it'll be the year of Linux on the desktop and the year of IPv6.
Nah, IPv6 is my kid's problem.
Yep.
Or their kid's problem.
Yeah, or their kid's problem. That's more likely.
Or their kid's.
They seem to keep playing with IPv4.
Yeah, keep playing with IPv4. Nat will save the day. That's fine. We're all good. We've got Nat. So we'll see. I need to. I haven't even dabbled with it. I might need to go and have a bit of a dabble with it. But yeah. We'll see what we can do with it in the future. The problem I've got is if you move providers, they take your IPv6 range.
Mm.
And if you've got all IPv6 internally, it screws things up. Rather be behind NAT, to be honest with you. Moving on. Google plan to restrict sideloading.
Yeah, this one's...
Who put this one in
this
here?
This one's an interesting one. So we all know that you can sideload an app in Android. Mm. Something that sort of you sort of can but can't do on an iPhone. So last week, Google revealed plans to verify the identity of all developers who distribute Android apps.
Yeah, and people aren't happy.
No, even those outside the Play Store. So even if you download an APK and you try and load it onto your phone, the developer must be verified in order for the app to actually load. So.
Mm.
It's a bit of a weird one. So normally on your Android device, you've got Play Protect, which is an app there that is essentially used to block harmful apps from being installed. What Google's doing, instead of just augmenting that, is they're going to bring in a new app, because newer is always better, called the Android Developer Verifier. So essentially what happens is the app can't be found on current devices, unlike Play Protect. Instead, it will be distributed in the future, with Google mandating that its OEM partners preload the app on new devices, specifically from Android 16 QPR2 or later. And it will talk with Play Protect in some way. We don't know how just yet. But there's a few security implications that they've got here. It could just be that the Android platform security team developed it rather than the Google Mobile Services team. From a security standpoint, decoupling it from Google Mobile Services reduces the attack surface on it. And decoupling it from GMS devices without GMS could also use the service. So that there's a few good points to it. But there's a lot of people that are very hesitant with this. They think that Google is going down the Apple walled garden approach, look, to be honest, in some way they probably should go some way down that path, but I'd prefer that they didn't go all the way down.
Honestly, when's the last time you sideloaded an app on your phone?
About 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? Yep. Okay.
So I use AdGuard. And I sideload that because Google won't let you download it directly.
Right. Yeah, I can't say I've done it in a long time. Maybe custom ROMs. But, you know, I've given up playing with custom ROMs. Like, you get them and you put them on there and there's just something that's not right. Mm. Always. Camera doesn't work or something doesn't start up properly. And it's like, oh, God, really?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. XDA are probably in an uproar over it.
Yep, more than likely.
they'll probably have a way around it, I'm sure. All right, well, with that news out of the way, let's get on with the AI Wars. Two quick ones for the AI Wars this week. Can AI predict the future? The answer is kinda.
Yeah.
This is all to do with like betting, I guess. It's no simple way to put it. Turns out if you get all the data and you feed it into a model, you can pretty much predict who's going to win what game.
Yep.
That's how it turns out. OpenAI's O3 Mini. As it says in the article here, article on eWeek, OpenAI O3 Mini is crushing it on returns, turning $1 into $9 on a single MLS bet by spotting values the market missed.
Yeah.
I mean, AI, it's going to put an end to, it's going to put an end to betting. I mean, I see no other way this is going to end. If you've got a model, like I'm thinking, okay, the footy, right? Take the footy. You've got all the history of all the games, you know, and it's obviously more than just who plays who, right? So you take all the data from the coaches and their history. You take all the data from all the players, when the players were injured, how many, all that data, who's won what and how long they've played and how old they are, and you feed all of that in and you look at the history. And then AI number crunches it all and bang, you get a prediction on who's going to win what game. I mean, it's just data. It's exactly what these models do.
That's exactly right. I'd be interested to see if it can predict, like this is a Toronto FC match that it predicted the win on. I'd be interested to see what it does with horse racing and dog racing and every other type of betting.
Well, why not? So the horses, right? You take the horse, and then you've got
the trainer, the jockey.
the trainer, the mare and the sire were for that horse. You feed all that data in, like the track they're on, the conditions of the track, all the history around all that goes in. Bang! It's like it's going to be pretty good at predicting the winner, right?
Yeah.
And we've got all that data. I mean, when's the last time you sat down and you watched sports? It's like, oh, yeah, he's got an average of, you know, when he plays on a hard surface, he's got an average of, you know, 29 runs off, you know, three overs and blah, 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 blah. The level of statistics that they keep are just astronomical,
yeah, that's
right?
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Interesting that Google is in third place there in Gemini 2.5 Pro, 94.13% versus O3 Mini's 99.29%.
Mm. Wow. Could be the end for bookies. that's one to keep track of. And then finally, we've got Google makes Gemini available on-prem.
Yeah. So this happens via Google's distributed cloud, which is their on-prem and edge cloud solution. So
they must have some TPUs in there, right?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that you're going to have some sort of GPU deployment. It basically for businesses that don't want to stick all their data into the cloud, this is the next best thing to have AI, but still keep your data where you want it.
Yep. And keeps it set. Then you know that your data is separate from any public models as well.
Yeah.
It's only going into your model.
Yeah. Well, you can do that already in Gemini because Vertex, you can dictate that the data that you feed into Vertex AI is not used to train other models.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. What I found interesting in this article as well, in just one quarter, large cloud providers added an average of roughly 72,000 NVIDIA Blackwell GPUs per week.
Yeah.
per week.
Per week.
72,000 per week.
Can you imagine, imagine the GPU? Remember the GPU shortage when crypto mining started off?
Yeah, I know. But can it play Crysis? That's a question.
Does it support Candy Crush?
Yeah, so that's a cool little development there. And if you're running an on-prem Google, then you might want to do that because I tell you, using Gemini now, there's barely a task I do where I'm not using it. That's where we're at with it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've had a good show here this fortnight. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. I'm going to give that a try during the fortnight. It's going to be an interesting little exercise. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review. You can go to YouTube and start the discussion there because that's the thing you get as well with YouTube Music. You've got the comments, which you don't get with Spotify. You can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au. You can find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And don't forget, this week's sponsors are Hivetech Solutions, Technofish Consulting, and Mantle Group, that mob that I work for. Look, that's about it from us. I know you guys have got to get cracking with a bit of work.
We do indeed.
Gonna hop to it.
Anything else from you?
No, I'm out of here. Yeah. See ya.
All right, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
These things are sent to challenges. Anyway, I've got a free 2-week trial and I'm going to be trying it because much like you, I'm thinking of pissing off Spotify. Not because of the user experience, but a lot of musicians have got the shits with Spotify at the moment. It's completely broken. You could upload a song. So a couple of problems. You could upload a song and that song could, for whatever reason, not go well. And then, for starters, half the music on Spotify has no more than 10 plays.
Yeah, right.
Like, just grok that for a second, right? Yeah. If you upload a song and then it doesn't go well, and then the particular case I'm thinking of, a YouTube thing I watched the other day, she created a music video for it, and the music video got really popular, and then all of a sudden the Spotify song got really popular, right? And they pulled the album down because they thought she had artificial plays from bots.
Right.
There's no recourse, right? Now, the other shit thing that can happen is you have these companies that playlists where you can put your song in to get plays because they promote the playlists.
Hmm.
Now, people will pay these companies and then their songs will go in the playlist. But what also happens is those companies will also take other songs that are popular and put them in the playlist so that those playlists get played by randos, thus inflating the plays on the... And it's no fault of your own, right? Overinflating the plays on your song, and Spotify thinks you're doing artificial plays and pulls the song from Spotify. Completely broken. Now, the other thing is when you have a profile page, right? If I go and look up Steve Reaver, that's my artist name, on Spotify, I've never uploaded a song to Spotify, right? Yet I go there and I find an artist profile page of me with two songs from me. Now, they are songs that I've remixed for someone else and my name is in the title and it's a profile page for me. Now...
So how does it get there?
I could upload a song and there's a thing called a contributor split in there. So you can split the returns with another person, right? Now, I know the person that put them up, right? And we've got a 50-50 split on it, right? But... you can do a 0-100 split. So let's say I wanted to, get onto Beyonce's profile, I would create a song and I would put in the title, you know, featuring Beyonce. It's complete bullshit, right? Mm. Do a revenue split. Beyonce gets 0%. I get 100%, right?
Yeah,
suddenly,
right.
That song appears on Beyonce's profile.
That's
and they've crap. Done nothing. They've done nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Now, in Beyonce's case, they got deals with the record company. The record company would jump up and down and be immediately removed. But if I was a small independent artist and this happened, nah, you're fucked. It's stuck there. It's hard. It's almost impossible to get rid of. And that's just tip of the iceberg of the problems that happen on Spotify. So I've got this ethical dilemma at the moment. I'm supporting this thing that, like, just is completely broken.
Yeah.
I had some personal goals. I wanted to get some stuff up on Spotify, but the streaming is like 0.00000012 cents or something per stream. It's like, not worth it. I've got a profile on SoundCloud. Yeah, sure. I pay a bit to have a pro profile on there, but at least I've got an audience. You can comment. I'm engaged with the people. The songs get played. That's the main thing. I've got an ethical dilemma with the way things are going on Spotify at the moment. It's completely broken.